This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle. My guest today, Bill Daughtry, one of the most recognizable sports voices, personalities, and faces in the world, a veteran radio and television host for 45 years, WCBS, MSG Network, WFAN, ESPN Radio, WMCA, National Black Network, and of course, music host on WBGO. Bill is now retired and enjoying life, but he still has his opinions on New York sports. He's also one of the few people who know just how bad a golfer I am. When Bill and I worked together at WBGO, we had many talks about what's going on in New York sports, and he never holds back. And so today we do it officially on Sports Jam. Great to see you, Bill.
Always a pleasure, Douglas. Glad to be in Pittsburgh once again.
Yeah, you know, it's such an amazing time for New York sports right now. I mean, where do you even start? Do you start with the Mets and Phillies? Do you start with the Jets firing their coach? Do you talk about the Yankees and Royals and the ADS? There's new things happening for the Knicks. We're going to start with the Mets and the Phillies in the National League Division Series. The Mets may be playing the best baseball, not only for their team this season, but the best in the league right now. They could win the World Series the way they're playing.
Well, you got to get there to win it. So don't start counting your chickens before they hatch. Of course, everybody talks about the MVP. I don't think there's a way Lindor wins it because of Shohei Ohtani, who has been Mr. Everything, Mr. Baseball, even though he's not pitching this year. Polar bear, Pete Alonso has come alive at the right moment. They've got a nice little ham and egg going on with their bullpen. They're scrambling and piecing it together. I like what I see. They do have some defensive deficiencies, particularly on the infield. Vientos at third base. But the plus there is he learned how to hit major league pitching this year, and he has been an outstanding addition to this team. And, I mean, there's not a lot not to like about the New York Mets.
The 1-2 pitch, swung on and missed strike three, put it in the books. And to the New York Mets, California, here we come. They have defeated the Philadelphia Phillies 4-1. They take the National League Division Series in four games for the first time ever in their 16th year at Citi Field.
But like everybody else, and somebody made this comment yesterday, any one of these teams that's left could win this, such as the state of Major League Baseball, where you have the Detroit Tigers. They're fun to watch. But there are 18 players in Major League Baseball who get paid more than their entire payroll. So, you know, they're doing it basically with Skubal and whatever they can put together out of the bullpen. Vest has been a nice pitcher for them. Their defense is good. And at this time of the year, that's what's going to carry you, your defense. And last night, I'm watching the Dodgers. It's like I felt bad for Bueller. They hit a ball out of the infield and got five runs. And then there's, you know, then they get the big punt. It's, I don't know, baseball today is so different from the days of number 21 and number 51. And number 51 was just barely 20 years ago, talking about Bernie Williams. Once upon a time, you could count on guys. I'll take those two players in particular. Roberto Clemente, you can count on him every year to hit 300, maybe even 350 in super-duper years. He was on the field toward the end of his career, became an injury-prone kind of guy. He was a great defender. Bernie Williams, great switch hitter. You could count on him every year, 280, 3 whatever, 20, 25, 30 home runs. You don't have guys that you can count on to see that from them for 5, 6, 7 consecutive years. Guys like Mike Schmidt. Guys like, what the heck, might as well, since we're there, might as well go there. Mays, Aaron, Mantle. You can count on those guys to give you those kind of numbers each and every year. But now the current state of baseball is maybe in the case of Lindor. He's been here, what, 5 years now, 4 years? And out of those years, maybe you've gotten this season and one other one like it, as opposed to five straight solid years of, hey, I'm the guy. And baseball is kind of like, I don't want to use the word, but I'll use it anyway, degenerated into that kind of thing. Pitching particularly. I mean, what general manager, even though you're wearing the Pirates colors, is going to draft a pitcher at the top of the or is going to be a pitcher at the top of the draft chart for him? Because, and we all know Paul Skenes has been the real thing this year. He had an outstanding year. But you know that 2 years down the road, something's going to happen. And in this generation, that something is usually Tommy John surgery or forearm tightness that leads to Tommy John surgery. It's, you know, the durability, the dependability of Major League Baseball players to me has, I mean, it's still Major League Baseball, and they're still the best players on the planet. I tried to be one and came way short. But the point is, as great and as gifted as they are, you can't depend on them. You can't rely on them to stay healthy and give you 5 years of uninterrupted service.
You talked about Bernie Williams, and the reason I have Bernie and Roberto's jerseys up, Bernie was a guest here on Sports Jam. Vera Clemente was a guest here on Sports Jam. The Yankees, Aaron Judge, he has to hit in order for this team to advance, right?
I don't understand. I really don't get this. I mean, and again, it speaks to lineup construction in the major leagues today. Shohei Ohtani leading off? Really? That's what we're doing now? Okay, I get it. 50-something home runs, yeah, you can pop one. And he has speed and all that. But the point that I'm making is, with lineup construction, please explain to me why Aaron Judge hits behind the right fielder, who is, I mean, he's been everything that you could expect this year, instead of it being vice versa.
Yeah, Soto's had a great year.
I mean, explain to me, Soto of the two is clearly the better hitter. Wouldn't it be a better strategy if Soto protected Judge instead of vice versa? Because you might be able to pitch around Judge, but you're not going to be able to pitch around Soto. He's such a gifted hitter. He's a guy who uses the whole field. He's a guy who will go deep into counts and draw walks. To me, it just seems, and again, this is the baseball dinosaur that I am, that Judge would hit in front of Soto. That way, you put Judge on at your own peril, but now you got to deal with this guy who has the power to knock it out of the park, but he also has the smarts and the skills to work a walk, go in the gap, go the opposite way. It's just been a mystery to me all year long why Aaron Boone has played it that way. But they're contending for a championship, so what do I know?
Yeah, they have a chance to win the series as well, but I don't understand why Aaron Judge, I mean, I know the pitching, you know, accelerates when it comes to the playoffs, but he has had difficulty in postseason. He has struck out so many times already in this series. I mean, where you bat him one, two, three, four, wherever you put him, he's got to turn it around and be able to hit some of these top pitchers. We know that Pete Alonso struggled during the year, but now during the postseason here, he's come alive for the Mets. Judge has to do the same for the Yankees.
You want to get your best hitter up more in the game, or your perceived best hitter. You want him to have maximum at-bats in the game, whereas once upon a time, instead of him getting maximum at-bats, you wanted him up in those what they call high-leverage situations that you see with relievers now. So you batted him third or fourth in the order, so there would be people on base when he got up to do his extra base damage. But the thinking has changed now.
Aaron isn't the Aaron Judge isn't the only Aaron making headlines in New York sports. We have Aaron Rodgers, but now he has a different head coach as of this week. Robert Saleh fired after this disappointing 2-3 start. Do you blame Saleh for the problems with the Jets, or is this the scapegoat?
No, just take the last two games, both Jet losses. There's no way you can tell me the defense didn't play well enough in those two games to win. Problem with this team is Aaron Rodgers and Daniel Hackett. Can't say it any other way, because they were specifically, Rodgers was brought here specifically not to make them a playoff team, but to make them a Super Bowl team. And he had to have his man Hackett to run the offense. Last year, you had Cobb. You had a couple other guys from Green Bay here. And we all know what happened, four plays in. So that just goes out the window. But now, Aaron Rodgers is the guy through five games. He's 2-3. And you can make the argument that these last two losses, they fall clearly in his space. Okay, you want to talk about the weather and the Denver game being bad? Okay, fine. But in London, Aaron Rodgers throwing two first quarter interceptions, one a pick six. They lose that game by one score. Tighten up those possessions. As a matter of fact, there was a fumble that he had. He had three turnovers in that game. And this is the guy that's supposed to take you to the Super Bowl. And he even alluded to it himself. He has to play better. Yeah, he has to play a lot better. But in the interim, his head coach got fired because he wasn't playing better. So, you know, there have been so many. Let's see. Robert Saleh, the first game he coached as head coach of the New York Jets, Sam Darnold was his quarterback. Last game he coached as a New York Jet, he coached against Sam Darnold. Woody Johnson was the ambassador to London, to Great Britain. They lose the game in London. Oh, by the way, Woody Johnson, while he signed on to the hire, he did not hire Robert Saleh. His brother did, because Woody was off being ambassador during that time. You know, there's so many quirky things that go into it, but I think the most telling thing is that Woody Johnson, when he addressed the media on that conference call, he talks about, I've been thinking about this for a couple of years. Wow. That's a ringing endorsement of the head coach that you didn't hire, who's trying to make your team better, who you didn't give a quarterback to, arguably, for three of the 4 years he was there. And then when he gets one, he gets five games with the guy. And the quarterback was the guy who failed again. And he's going to take the bullet. Okay, I get it. You know, Jeff Ulbrich, we'll see what he is. You know, Jeff Saturday was talking about this morning. And Jeff was in that position when he was hired as head coach of the Indianapolis Colts a few years ago. He was brought in to give the team a spark. And he did. They won a couple of games out of the gate. But there was no playoffs that year, if I recall correctly. And Ulbrich will do the same here. He's respected by the players. You know, another point I heard this morning, the assistant coach, the coordinator, he's the backup quarterback. He's the most loved guy in the locker room, because he can just go ahead and do whatever he does as it fits in with the team, and everybody loves him. But now he's got a whole different agenda that he's got to figure out. Is he going to stay? Is Hackett going to continue to call the plays? Is Hackett going to continue to be in a position to put the offense in a bad spot, that they don't produce, that they don't do enough to help them win games? They gave up 90 total yards to the Minnesota Vikings last week defensively.
Pretty good.
Seems to me that's a game you should win.
Third down, 49 seconds to go. Rodgers, quick throw, and it's intercepted. Stephon Gilmore gets the Jets again. As a Patriot, as a Bill, and now as a Minnesota Viking.
When we talk about the Giants, everyone, you know, focuses in on their quarterback as well, Daniel Jones. That division has got much tougher now with the fact that Jaden Daniels may be the MVP of the league the way he's playing with the Washington Commanders. It's interesting how you could have a player like that turn a whole franchise around. Is Daniel Jones, in your opinion, the quarterback of the future for the Giants? Should they have paid him all that money, and will he come through this year and help them reach the playoffs?
That they have paid him all that money, I get it. That's quarterback's the toughest position in the National Football League, and it's the most important in the National Football League. Daniel Jones did take this team to the playoffs a couple of years ago. Last year, he got hurt. Last year's offensive line was garbage. That's part of the reason he did get hurt. But based on that 1 year, remember what I was talking about before with players now, even though we were talking about baseball, you can apply it to all sports. You're not going to find guys that are going to go out and give you five rock-solid, can't-miss years in a row. You're not going to find those guys anymore. Daniel Jones is the best the Giants could do. They signed him. They gave him the money. I say Saquon Barkley got everybody on that team paid. The left tackle got paid. The quarterback got paid. A couple other people got paid. They went out and got a free agent, but they didn't give Saquon the money. And a couple of weeks ago, when they put up 26 yards rushing against the worst rushing defense in the National Football League, bar none, talking about the Dallas Cowboys, to me, that was the first game that they lost because they did not have Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, that will come back to haunt them several times this year.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and of course now Singletary's hurt.
Yeah,
but Tracy and Gray did a great job, and Daniel Jones did a great job in guiding them to victory in Seattle last week. And here's the thing. I don't think the way Daniel Jones plays is sustainable because he's a big guy. He sticks his shoulder down. He encourages some of the hits that he gets. You know, and after a while, that catches up to you. That style of play catches up to you. And a guy who's already been hurt a couple of times in his career, and he's coming off of a knee injury, but he's not letting that inhibit him one little bit. You know, I have always liked Daniel Jones for his athleticism. I am in that minority that says, yeah, the Giants can win with this guy. Because they went up to Minnesota and beat a championship contender. At least that's what everybody thought they were with Kirk Cousins back then. They go up to Minnesota, win a playoff game against a pretty daggone good team. They had Jefferson. They still had Dalvin Cook at that point. Primetime Dalvin Cook. They go up there and they win that game. Again, injuries play a huge part in this. Injuries and front office decisions, and I think letting Saquon Barkley go, I understand why they did it. I get it. But letting him go, I think that's going to be the poison pill for the New York Giants this year. I'm glad with what they're doing. I'm impressed with the way they're playing. Let's see if they can sustain what they did in Seattle. I mean, Daniel Jones put together some masterful drives in that game. He gets a 15-play drive on their first possession, and you can't point to Daniel Jones as the reason that that wasn't a touchdown. Running back Gray fumbled it at the goal line. Minnesota scoops it, goes the other way, 102 yards, whatever it was. You know, but Seattle. But still, the Giants managed to overcome that. And to me, that says something about a team playing on the road, playing against the 12th man, having misfortune on their very first possession of the day, but still having the will and the fortitude to come back and win that game. It bodes well for them, but if I'm Daniel Jones, how invested can I be, Doug? Because the tea leaves are all saying, well, after this year, they're done with this guy. So how invested can that quarterback be? And I give him credit that he's come out and he's given his all. He's playing as hard as he can. But at the end of the rainbow, even if he gets the Giants to the playoffs this year, they're going to show him the door.
Most likely. Now, those who have been following Bill Daughtry's career and listening to him on the radio and all those stations we've talked about or watching him on television know he is also a big basketball fan. The Knicks made a big trade recently, and now they have Carl Anthony Towns, the New Jersey kid, and he's had a wonderful career with the Timberwolves. Will he make a difference? Would he be somebody that could put the Knicks over the top after their wonderful run last year?
Last year, it was a different style of play. This year, they have to incorporate an undisputable offensive weapon at a position where all they wanted you to do was defend, block shots, get some rebounds. Now they've got to turn that guy into a very important offensive cog. Now, what are they going to do about the defense, the rebounding, and the shot blocking? Of those three things, maybe the thing that Carl Anthony Towns does best is rebound, but in my mind, he doesn't get impactful rebounds. I'm not saying he's padding the stats or anything like that, but he's not getting you the possessions that Mitchell Robinson and Hartenstein got you last year, because that's all they were out there to do. Anything they did after that was secondary. Well, now you've got to rejigger your offense, that the guy who you just counted on for rebounding and shot blocking, now he's going to be involved in scoring points. It's no longer 5-on-4 when the Knicks have a center on the floor. Unless it's Jericho Sims, and now he's changed his number to number 20, and we'll see how that works out. Bottom line is, I'm not a big Carl Anthony Towns guy. He's a wonderful person.
Yes, he is.
He is you're not going to find a better person. Okay.
Came from great stock. Had his parents on the show years ago. Unfortunately, he lost his mom during COVID. But wonderful parents who have supported his run. But, we'll see how he does now with the Knicks, and there will be pressure on him.
Well, here's the resume. Disappears at big moments in games, commits stupid fouls, and he's really bought into his press clippings that he's the best long ball shooting big man in the game. Will he make the Knicks better? They've got to figure out how to incorporate him into that offense. And he says all the right things about Tom Thibodeau, but I kind of like raising an eyebrow to that. Because, I mean, they were together in Minnesota. Didn't end well. Did not end well. And then, oh, by the way, he becomes a $50 million player next year. And the year after that, he's a $60 million player.
Finally reaching the salary that Bill Daughtry had throughout his career. Finally getting it. I know. Before we go here today, got to talk about, you had a great run at WBGO as a jazz host. Who have you been listening to lately? And when it's time to relax, who are you listening to?
I still go back and rely on some of the old stuff, the old stanzas we used to listen to. I just do. Just before we started this interview, I was listening to Earth, Wind, and Fire. I was listening to the Blackbirds. I do like Samara Joy. I like her a lot. Did an event with her last year. Wonderful young lady. And when you go into her history with jazz, before she started singing it, it was zero. But fortunately, John Faddis, who was her instructor at Purchase College in Westchester County, fortunately, he had the wherewithal to just introduce her to some stuff and then get out of her way and look at the product that we're getting now. The term jazz is all-encompassing. Felix Hernandez always says, it's all jazz, and it is. You look at some of the great jazz artists who made their bones playing R&B. You tell people that John Coltrane is playing a Soupy Sales show, huh? Yeah, It's all connected. Bernard Purdy, one of the great drummers. People think of him as a jazz man, but he was a drummer on Rock Steady, one of Aretha Franklin's biggest hits. And he tells a story of how he had a drum riff in there because everybody thought the recording stopped, but the light was still on, and he saw it, and he went, B-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d- They're on a. I don't listen to a lot of radio now. It's tough to consume. And when I left, as we all know, terrestrial radio was like on the downhill. And that trend has continued. And now, for instance, I have an electric car. Still have a gas car, but I have an electric car. You can't listen to AM radio in an electric car anymore. So what just happened? My old station, 98.7 FM, moved over to 880 AM. Guess who I can't hear anymore on the radio? That would be the Knicks. That would be the Mets. It's an ever-changing landscape. And so I've kind of like just locked in, and I got like about 17,000 songs on here.
Wow.
You know.
Those who have listened to Bill through the years know he's a big Stratomatic fan, right? He has been playing Stratomatic baseball for a long time. But I want to ask you've watched a lot of games in your life and you've listened to games. You have a chance to go back in time, Bill, to any sporting event that occurred that involved a New York sports team. What would it be and why?
Super Bowl 25, New York Giants beat the Buffalo Bills in what is still one of the closest Super Bowl games ever. But what made that game so special was where it was and when it was. We were in Desert Storm. We were deeply ensconced in Desert Storm. The game was in Tampa, Florida. It was the first time you ever had to be wanded to go into a stadium. You couldn't come into the stadium with a camera. This was in old Tampa Stadium where umbrellas were never allowed. But that day, Kodak made a killing selling disposable cameras because people couldn't bring cameras into the stadium. And here we have, I'm proud to be an American playing on the PA. Everybody's waving flags. Here comes Whitney Houston with the national anthem, the flyover, now the game, which is one of the greatest games you'll ever see. So, I mean, even though that was what, 30 something years ago, that was far and away the best professional sporting event that I ever witnessed firsthand. Nobody's even, there's not even a close second. And I've been in the building when the Stanley Cup was won. I've been in the building when the World Series was won. Nothing compares to what we saw at Super Bowl 25. And by the way, we didn't realize it at the time, but we were in the safest place in the world. Even with that Black Hawk gunship circling the stadium and the sniper with his foot on the rail, I mean, you could see that all game long. But what we did not know at the time was that the commander of the American forces at Desert Storm was Norman Schwarzkopf. General Schwarzkopf, do you know where he was from?
New Jersey.
He was at MacDill Air Force Base, which is right there in Tampa, Florida. So the guy who's got his finger on the trigger, you really going to go start some mess in his community? You know, just an afterthought. But it was one of those Super Bowls that was played, one of the last ones that was played, without that week off in between. I was on an airplane going to Tampa when the Giants were beating the 49ers in the NFC Championship game. I never saw that game. You know, I've seen it since in replay. And saw the Oakland Raiders get destroyed by Buffalo sitting at LaGuardia Airport in the AFC game. So when you get to Tampa, back then media day was on Tuesday. It's not like this extravaganza they do on Monday night. It was Tuesday. It was at the stadium. And when we came to media day and saw the Giants in their blue uniform, in their uniforms, it's like, they're really in this. They are, Big Blue is here, you know. And from that point, it just mushroomed. And it was a great week, topped off by one of the greatest Super Bowls, in my opinion, ever.
Sports broadcasting legend Bill Daughtry has been our guest here on Sports Jam. Bill, I know you're getting ready to head out back on the links. You're terrific.
I haven't been playing that much golf, Doug.
But you're going to get back out there, and you're good too. So I just want people to know that. Yeah, you're good.
I can find a bunch of people who tell you that's not true.
Bill, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for joining us today,
Doug. It's been my pleasure. And one of those things that I realized in hindsight, in that 45-year career you talked about, the station that I worked at longest was WBGO. I was there for 12 years.
Fantastic. And you're good at whatever you do, Bill. Thanks again.
Thank you, Doug.
Sports Jam is a WBGO Studios production. You can hear all the past shows by going to wbgo.org/sportsjam or wbgo.org/studios. You can also find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts or wherever you hear podcasts. Special thanks going out to the NFL Network, NFL Films, and the Mets Radio Network for our clips during the show. Until our next Sports Jam session, I'll see you at the game.